Frank, can you tell me if it's appropriate for the sitting Vice President of the United States to be receiving hundreds of thousands of dollars a year from a company that's doing business with the government?
I can tell you it is totally appropriate.
Really?
Because the compensation is for past activity,
right,
and nothing to do with the future. This is very, right, very common. As a matter of fact, I believe Senator John Edwards, as we're bringing him up again, probably has the same arrangement with his law firm when he left. As long as
they're not doing business with the government. First off, I don't know if he is. But this is a different deal. It's a company that gets a no-bid contract. Certainly, you understand it's a political.
There's no evidence to suggest he had anything to do with
it. I didn't say that he did. It's interesting you should raise that, though.
Because that was your next question.
No. I just want you to help me understand. You were President's right. I mean, I know this. I'm make sure our audience knows. You were President Reagan's political director.
Yes.
Political genius, if I say.
Thank you.
Don't you think it's a political mistake? At least a political mistake for a guy to be hauling down more money from Halliburton than he is from the taxpayers of the United States.
Again, this is funded by an insurance policy. If Halliburton went out of business tomorrow, mm-hmm,
which it
he would still get this compensation.
Oh, they ain't going out of business, man. They got billions of dollars and no-bid contracts.
Vic,
they're going to be fine.
Vic, you've been in Washington for a long time, and you've been around politics most of your life. You're a political strategist. You know that when you run a campaign, you want to run on issues that people actually care about.
Crossfire fool, shut the hell up talking about Halliburton's contract has nothing to do with the future. Look, don't pretend that the fact that Cheney has ties to Halliburton is irrelevant. And the fact that they got bid-free contracts and received them all throughout Iraq. That's like pretending that the fact that Boy George, you know, the brain drain, buffoonish drunk, but had a silver congressman's spoon up his behind, is irrelevant to the fact that he skipped over other teeth-chattering coward Americans to get his spot in the National Guard. We all know what time it is on that. And then you're saying, and what is this free contract handouts to Halliburton if not a white male corporation affirmative action program? I think you know what time it is. Slave revolt. You're listening to 104.1, 101.1 Santa Cruz, 106.7 Illinois, LUVER.com, the world, and radioforall.net, universe, slave of old time. Tonight we're going to shoot our way into a shameless file as we're going to deal with the issues concerning basically two Sambos picking cotton on Master's Plantation, a debate between a Democrat, Sharpton, and another coon for the Republicans. Then we're going to blast our way into the Beyond the Shadow segment, where we're going to deal with the fact that the devil is now trying to wear rose-shaded glasses. So we got all that and a hell of a lot more on 104.1 Slave Revolt Radio.
They destroyed the world.
The entire Los Angeles area. Already, hospital facilities have begun to crack under the strain, and civil defense authorities state that the situation is much the same across the entire country. Martial law is now nationwide.
Major cities in all parts of the country, New York, Los Angeles, report plague victims falling dead in the streets, in their homes, at their work. The first symptom appears to be severe choking, followed by immediate unconsciousness. Death occurs within minutes.
Whether a state of war between China and Russia still exists is not important any longer. Our fellow countrymen are dying. The very foundations of civilization are beginning to crumble under the dread assault of that horror long feared germ warfare.
Colonel Rat Channel, this is a Class 1 emergency. All civilian traffic is barred from streets and highways. Stay in your homes. Stay in your homes. Those found without specific military orders are subject to summary execution. Stay in your homes. Repeat, Colonel Rat Channel, this is a Class 1 emergency. All civilian traffic is barred from streets and highways.
Now the question is survival. Is this the end of technological man? Is this the conclusion of all our yesterdays? The boasts of our fabled science, the superhuman conquests of space and time, the age of the wheel. We were warned of judgment. Well, here it is. Here. Now. In the form of billions of microscopic bacilli. This is the end.
We're going to deal with is basically two Sambos picking cotton for Massa on the plantation. You know, a while ago, J.C. Watts, former little football Negro, now he turns politician. He said that he's willing to debate anyone on the subject of why blacks should vote Republican. And of course, Democrats run off from the plantation, the Democratic plantation, Al Sharpton. But J.C. Watts was held up. I guess Massa wouldn't let him leave the plantation, so they called out another color, a Reverend Joe Watkins. And Watkins ends up taking the place of old J.C. Watts as they begin to debate various issues. About what's going on Sam's plantation. So first off, the CNN host, this is what it was on, Paula Zahn, asked Negro Sharpton if a recent ad campaign that has come out attacking Boy George, if it's over the top. And then they go back and forth and we'll take it from there. So, check this out.
Good effort on your part. We're going to try to retrieve that. We're going to get the two of you together in one room, I promise. But let's start off tonight by listening to one of the radio ads also being aired with the obvious purpose of getting the black vote out for John Kerry.
Bush is a rich man, and the White House is sending black men and women to be slaughtered in Iraq while Cheney and his Halliburton boys get rich on oil. Don't keep getting played.
Is that ad over the top?
I think that the ad is not only over the top. I think that when you look at the fact that everyone in politics gears toward the market that they are trying to interest, they are directly talking about how a disproportionate amount of people that died in Iraq were black.
So wait a minute, you're saying it's not over the top. You agree the essence of what it's saying?
I'm saying that there is no question Halliburton made money. There's no question a lot of blacks died in Iraq. No one should have died if the premise for going in was weapons of mass destruction. So I think that clearly, if you can't deny that Halliburton made the money. You cannot deny that people white and black died. And you cannot deny that blacks died disproportionately. So Republicans need to answer it rather than talk about what's over the top. Let's talk about what is in fact happening.
Why don't we answer answer the charges in this act. Are there or are there not a disproportionate number of African American men and women dying in this war in Iraq?
Paula, to that I would say, don't believe the hype. This campaign advertisement
is clearly no.
I don't believe that. Not for
you
one
don't
second.
Believe it or
what I do know is that African American men and women have put their lives on the line for this country. They've been brave. They are among our greatest heroes, and I'm proud. I know this. More importantly, this president is proud of every African American woman who has stood up in line for the United States.
No,
but let me say this though, about these 527. Let's talk about the 527.
Hang on. You can't both talk at the same time, or nobody's going to understand anything. But wait. This is a very specific charge they are lobbying.
Yeah.
You look at the statistics, and they do tell you that more African men and women are dying in this war.
It is the choice of African-American men and women, as it is the choice of all Americans, to enlist, to serve, to support our country.
All right, so you're acknowledging that these statistics are true.
I don't know that the statistics are necessarily true, but what I will say is this, that these 527 ads are over the top, and this is why the President of the United States and Senator McCain...
That's a whole other subject that we'll get off on another
time. ...are against them, and they've gone to court to stop them.
All right, now you see how silly these little Sambos are. Who go all out to protect massa. First, you got this Reverend Joe Watkins. He's a Republican jig on the plantation. And he's going on and on about how it's over the top and don't believe the hype. Yet, he doesn't even know the facts, which is like many of these little right-wingers. You know, Limbaugh and on and on and on. It's just that they're not even halfway challenged. So they can babble on and sound authoritative, like they know what they're talking about. Here, Paula Zahn, who is by no means some kind of, you know, radical intellectual or anything else, she's just a, you know, little bourgeois anchor, she just asked him to respond to that simple question about the disparity of black death versus, you know, white death in Iraq. And this coon has no facts that he can pull out either way. But wants you to quote-unquote don't believe the hype and then attack the ads as being over the top. In other words, he wants this whole thing to be focused in on how it comes across. Are they too brash with Boy George? We should get rid of these little campaigns altogether. And as I said before, on a previous show, how certain individuals just want this type of defunding to stop so that, you know, little liberals on Kerry's side, like Move On, can't do their ads. And then they'll compromise by telling the Swift Boat clowns on their side. Meanwhile, the masses of people have no voice. Now, this isn't so much, in my opinion, for what's happening now or just now per se, but in the future when more radical analysis starts to come up and you start having attack ads saying, don't trust either side, get off the plantation altogether. See, they want to neutralize it now in the same way that they've been attacking, even though he's just on another plantation, that meaning Nader, they've did everything they could and have done everything they could to try to neutralize any momentum Nader has ever been able to develop. This is in part a policy that they want to develop where basically people are just observers and don't have any form of intellectual or semi-intellectual discussion about the issues that we face. You're just supposed to shut up and vote like a drone.
Yeah, but I think if you listen carefully, the thing that got me and Tracy hit him first, the silly Negro did not know. He said he don't think that X or Y. Then they hit him and said, well, is it or not? He don't know. And he don't know because he don't care. See? But he likes to posture as if he has some relationship with us, that is the black community. I don't know. What do you do? What I would like to do to a person like that, try to speak in your name, speak about you, and don't know and don't want to know, because I tell you something, the information is available. You know, we do know this. 1,019 Americans have died in Iraq since the invasion. We know that. That's a fact.
But the Black Caucus also put out a report showing the disparaging. Even Paula Zahn admitted it. She had the facts right there. This Negro doesn't want to know, and the type of bourgeois politics that they play is not really supposed to be in your interest to know. You're supposed to be just a gumpified drone that just goes off of emotions, just goes off of feeling, just goes off of some form of artificial allegiance. And if you drone yourself down to that place, well, then they got you. And then they can sloganeer and get you into kind of a little booby trap game of where the Democrats are supposed to represent, quote unquote, the working man and all of that, where the Republicans are supposed to represent hardworking, independent, bootstrap, God-fearing, yada, yada, yada. In other words, you'll be soundbited down to a gumpified vision of what you think you represent, and thereby vote for one of these clowns as a representative of what you are supposed to stand for instead of taking action on your own intellectual, physical independence.
But more importantly, this was an exercise, Tracy, in head fixing. They're trying to tell people what is acceptable to say on the radio and what is not acceptable.
Well, I don't know if it's more important or not. I just think it's interconnected to the fact that they're just trying to put out a particular philosophy about how you're supposed to understand the world.
And worse, I think than that.
And all of the things that are interconnected with those particular things, as I said before, when the guy said that we should get rid of these particular forms of attack ads and all of that, that all plays into a very narrow and shallow form of intellectual discussion, which basically is going to determine whether or not you and your kid get a clean cup of water.
I'd like to follow this. You know why? Because they talking about going to court. I don't care about their opinion, but they said that the Republicans was taking that to court so that it couldn't be on the air. And what I heard said in the ad actually was pretty measured. They talking about, oh, that's crazy. That's crazy. A disproportionately large number of black soldiers died in Iraq. We were lied to, and we got no business there. That's over the top. First, they trying to mess your mind up and suggest to you that such things should not be said. They're going behind your back to the court and taking it off the air legally. That's what I'm looking at.
Well, that's not really that much different than what's been going on in all types of things. When you look at the legislation that has recently come down as far as how much you're able to sue, you know, someone, some corporation that has blown off your leg and stuff like that, that's part and parcel. The corporations use the state and laws of the state to help bludgeon you into control. That's what the WTO and all of these types of policies and legislation are about. It's part of class warfare, and it's part of the American landscape in this class warfare. So next, though, Paula Zahn asked about the other statistics that show the poor conditions in this country. So that, first of all, you know, you heard about the statistics about, you know, black folks dying at a higher rate than whites and all of that type of thing, which should come at no surprise. More blacks died in the Vietnam War as far as American citizens, even though even back then we were like 10% of the population. Now we're like 14%, but we still died at a higher rate. And within my commentary, If Boy George Had an Afro, I went into how Boy George skipped over the 100,000 people who were in front of him to get into the National Guard, you know, when he was protecting Texas from Alabama, as opposed to the Project 100,000 they had set up for black people, which was a way to put them in the annihilation program in Vietnam's front line. But first, Paula Zahn asked about the statistics of the poor condition of the country overall, and why people should vote for Boy George. So check this out.
Talk about some of the other statistics. that I don't think anybody can ignore here. According to the Congressional Black Caucus, 7.3 million Americans are now without health insurance, and the poverty rate for African Americans rose 24% last year. How are you going to convince those people that they should vote for George Bush?
Well, you know, the beauty is that we, meaning African Americans, are not owned by any political party. And if you listen to some Democrats talk about it and some leaders talk about it, what they'll try to tell you is that all African Americans are poor. That's not the case. If you look at what President Bush has done, since President Bush has been president, over a million African Americans are now homeowners, own their own homes, are building wealth.
But you're not proud of those other statistics, are you?
What I'm proud of is the president's response to the statistics, what he has done with historically black colleges and universities by raising the amount of federal funding for black colleges, what he's done in the No Child Act.
Let me move on to Reverend Stark, because the Democrats aren't off the hook here either. Hang on one second. If we're going to have a dialogue,
he should at least answer one question tonight. If J.C. is going to send you, I mean, he should have at least given you the facts.
He asked you two questions and you haven't answered either one of them. The facts stand for themselves. This president has done a very strong job.
I want to move you on to the issue of Democrats, people within your own party, are accusing your party of not representing African Americans the way it should.
I think that there is a great challenge in the party. I clearly was one of them that raised it. I continue to raise it. But I do not say because you have a relationship that has questions in it that you go and just start running in the streets with anybody who's never done anything for you and has stood against your interests. George Bush sent lawyers to court, to the Supreme Court, against affirmative action. We have had an increase in poverty, an increase in unemployment. We have had any number of judicial appointments by George Bush, by people who have defended segregationist judicial policies. So to say that he's an alternative to our internal party things is to say that suicide is the answer to a headache.
All right, you've just picked four or five issues. You heard what Reverend Watkins said. He's trying to increase home ownership among African Americans.
Absolutely. Home ownership.
Point to one other statistic.
Education. This president has supported public education, funding for kids in public schools from grades K to 12.
He never came through with the funding on Leave No Child Behind.
I have to go to church on Sunday and repent for cutting two reverends off, but I got to do it. We got to move on, gentlemen.
God bless you as well. You just got a bad guy to represent. I feel
he's a great guy.
Reverend
Charles, he's a great guy.
Good guy. He should be in retirement.
I can hardly wait to see you talk to during the commercial. Reverend Al Sharpton and Reverend Joe Watkins, thank you again for dropping by here this evening.
All right. Once again, you see another trait that goes on in these little bourgeois corporate media stations. The jigs always talking over each other.
Yeah.
I mean, this is another constant feature in our crossfire, too. You know, even when they have white jigs, it crosses color lines. Because basically, it's all about artificial heat, you know, in a lot of these shows, where you have one person who's supposed to be in opposition to the other, even though they're both on the same plantation. One's just on one corner, one's on the other corner. But they end up shouting back and forth at one another, and it appears that they're in, you know, diametrically opposed views and all of that. But at the end of the day, if you take your eye off the ball, Sharpton's boy that he's going for, Kerry, wants to add 40,000 more troops. Watkins, his master, Boy George, he wants to keep things as they're going, you know, keep the empire rolling, even though death and degradation is going up. And the only business that is going good is the business I got in West Oakland, the head coffin business. And but outside of that, everything so everything else is deteriorating. So you have a situation where you hear this sloganeering, where you hear Watkins talking about Boy George supports public education. Boy George has come out in full throttle for these little like Christian based schoolings where they can fund these religious schools but get public money. He supports all of this charter stuff, even though reports have just come out that no, you're not better educated going through a charter school, and on and on and on. This is all part of the class warfare attack. But this coon, Watkins, knows that most black people are for public education. So he can't just come out and say, you know, charter school's the way to go, or some of these other little, you know, slick, you know, hand maneuvers that they got going on to shovel out money from the communities. So he's going to throw this little slogan out there, term out there, as if it stands on its own foundation. Now, if Palazan challenged him on it, he would have sank in quicksand on that issue, just like he did on the issue of knowing the statistics concerning the black death ratio in Iraq. But once again, he doesn't want to get into these discussions. He wants to get into this sloganeering thing where one party is supposed to symbolically stand for something and the other party symbolically stands for that. And you're supposed to be a drone that is supposed to pledge your allegiance because you know morally, quote unquote, what these clowns stand for.
Well, you know, I have to do a double take on Tracy's point about the heat generated in this babbling between these two gentlemen and no light. The whole point of communicating is to communicate, is to exchange ideas, is to interface, so that when they finish talking, we ought to be able to walk away from that broadcast and say, okay, Al thinks the following, and the Republican guy, he thinks such and such and such. Nothing of the sort happened. They just got in there, started babbling, yelling at each other. And after all that acrimony was over, she said, good evening, gentlemen. Now, stop and think about that. Was that really an accident? Or was it a kind of a play, a little reality play? Al Sharpton gets to look like he's tough, like he don't take no stuff. They just spout some noise at the other guy, and nothing is clarified. So, in fact, you get the misimpression that the guy that's on your side is an ignoramus that won't let anybody talk. So that's what I guess I got to be, an ignoramus that won't let anybody talk. And that's politics in America. Unfortunately, right now it is, brothers and sisters. But this is something we're going to have to work to change, what people will accept, what people think is necessary. Actually, it was a disgrace is what it was, that people could go out here and carry on that way and think that they've gotten away with something. Because the truth of the matter is we deserve answers about all of the important questions that was raised in that small segment.
Well, the whole point of having them on the Shameless File is to help reiterate the point that we're not going to get answers from them. We got to turn to ourselves, because this is just a minstrelized script in the first place that is, like I said before, designed to produce artificial heat. Hold on one second.
Everywhere. I was right. Everything I knew was wrong. Thank you.
All right, now we're about to jump into a Beyond the Shadow segment. And what this segment deals with is that the devil is trying to look at the world, in Iraq in particular, with rose-colored glasses. And in essence, what I mean by that is that anyone who's honest and halfway awake can see that things ain't going all that well for Sam in Iraq right now. He's getting that head, well, coffined off. And every time you turn around, new evidence shows that he was more of a barbarian than even most people think of, and a coward. But what we're going to start off with is Aaron Brown. Aaron Brown had on this particular individual where the senator, and what they did was they talked about why the Iraqis are not more supportive of the American cause. So let's see what these two clowns have to say to each other about what's going on in Iraq as we start this off, and then we'll take it from there. Check this out.
Small, or a relatively small number of violent people who are simply dedicated to preventing the creation of a stable government can undermine progress, even if the vast majority of people want to have progress.
Yeah, that last part of the 7-7 is one of the most interesting things in all of this to me, because, and I follow this as closely as I can, I don't see the stuff that you see, but I wonder why it is that Iraqis, who after all we did liberate from a truly reprehensible government, why Iraqis are not more supportive, are not more helpful, are not more willing to fight for their own country. It doesn't seem to me they're doing a very good job of it.
Well, this is an example of no good deed going unpunished, isn't it? We were temporarily welcomed as liberators, but that seemed to last for the blink of an eye. And it's irrational to my way of thinking, Aaron, and I'm sure to the American people here, where we're spilling our blood, we're spending our treasure on behalf of the people of Iraq, but there doesn't seem to be that much gratitude. But I will say this, an increasing number of Iraqis have shown that they are willing to lay down their lives for their country. These young men who were lined up to become police officers who were brutally murdered, the police officers who were slain in the shooting earlier this week, there are a number who are willing to stand up and fight. And that's why I think it's important, even if it's an imperfect election this coming January, that we go forward as best we can with the electoral process, because ultimately it's the Iraqi people who need to create freedom and prosperity for themselves with our assistance. It is not enough that only Americans are willing to fight and die, and once they have a legitimate government of their own, perhaps even more of them will be willing to do that.
You know, this is some sick stuff, because here you have a situation where, think back before the invasion, the overwhelming number of people in Iraq, I'm not even talking about anywhere else in the world, did not want Sam to invade. They were deadly against it. And then within that region, Iran, don't invade. Kuwait, don't invade. Saudi Arabia, don't invade. They were all saying, don't invade. This is going to stir up things. You're going to create more turmoil than your little minds can possibly anticipate. And on and on and on. It was Boy George and them selling this Wizard of Oz illusion while he was, you know, working behind the curtain, weapons of mass destruction, not weapons, Saddam is a madman, you know, and on and on and on. This is just a game. Now, these guys playing the traditional colonialist game, meaning the mindset that we've come to help bring the downtrodden out of poverty and blight and so on and so forth, and they're not appreciative. Now look, as the movement grew, it became clear that when Sam first conquered, many people were kind of in a shell shock type of mode at first, many of the masses. You had a resistance going on, but it had not truly caught on fire. And Sam had an opportunity to mislead the people in a tragic imperial type of form by giving a lot of them jobs, you know, the lower end jobs, of course, they would have, getting as many young people back in school as possible, so on and so forth. But instead, the Halliburtons of the world were so greedy and so consumed with their profit modes that they went in there and weren't even thinking about the Iraqi people. So you had Iraqi people in a country where it's the second largest producer of petroleum in the world waiting 10 to 24 hours for a cup of gas. You had large portions of Iraq with no electricity, even though you had all of these Iraqis who had skills saying, look, we can do it. Just give us the equipment. But Sam and all of his little corporate minions were so busy ripping off the Iraqis that they were just like, look, we already kicked you guys to the curb, you know, and they were playing this little conquering. And at the early stages, think back, it was a very arrogant period. They had their little card decks out and stuff, you know, like, oh, look, this guy's an ace of spades. This guy, you know, like it's all a game. It was all a game. Meanwhile, they're spreading depleted uranium, so kids are eating depleted uranium with their cornflakes. This doesn't go unnoticed. It raised the level of the population coming down with various forms of cancer to 40%. Imagine that. A population, a nation's cancer rate raising up to 40%. Well, basically, at that point, that's when people just say, that's it. We are going to start our own business with Tracy, the head coffin business. You know, they called me up. I said, get busy. I'll send you some tools, whatever you need. And we all just collaborated and got busy. And that's just what should have happened. These fools talking about how they don't understand what's wrong with the Iraqis. You up there blowing up the kids. I mean, this is some sick stuff. You know, this takes on mythical type proportions. Something that only someone with the mentality of George Armstrong Custer, thinking he's going to ride right into the middle of Crazy Horse, Two Moon, Touch the Clouds, Rain in the Face, Gaul, and Sitting Bull, and subdue the Indians. Well, we know what happened to George Armstrong Custer. Well, we're now seeing the modern George Armstrong Custers get their cowboy boots kicked off their heads.
These damn fools have lost their mind. I think Tracy captured it. You almost have to overcome a feeling of disgust to speak to such foolishness, because it's so obviously foolish. They're helping. They say, well, we help these people. We help these people. You helped. Well, fact of the matter is, if you study the documents written by the Wolfowitz gang, that is about the New American Century.
How about the Project for the New American Century?
The Project for the New American Century. You see that they had their eyes on that Iraq oil for some time now. This was not a new thing. They wanted to get control of the oil so that they could stand at the spigot, at the valve, and control Europe. Decide how much Europe would get.
And also, you know, as I've been saying on the show, is that you have a situation where a lot of these things have been outlined before, like the whole project of the New American Century. If one looks at the Silk Road strategy and that outline and how they want and where they want the gas pipelines to go, and Brzezinski's The Grand Chessboard, basically talking about how various regions must be broken up. So the former Soviet Union, those particular states must be broken up. And if you look at like some of the things that are going on in Russia, like even this recent situation that took place in Chechnya, you'll see that many of these same cats including some of the top leaders, were at one time getting trained with bin Laden over in Afghanistan. Because a part of this Silk Road strategy grand chessboard game is weakening other states and other corporations within those particular states, making them marginal players, China, Russia, et cetera, et cetera, and then fulfilling the goals of U.S. corporate financial interest.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I wanted to add that before the project, New American Century, there was an article in Time Magazine, May of 1998. It was titled A Rush for Oil. And it talked about the Caspian Sea area having these large deposits of oil. And since the collapse of the USSR, basically it's a race to the oil. And the competitors were people like China, and the U.S. was talking about, you know, the best way to isolate the oil, capture it, run it through a pipeline from Caspian Sea through Oman, through Afghanistan, and so on out to the Gulf region. You know, the blueprint's always been there, you know what I'm saying?
And what's also fascinating is if you see some of the maps where they've outlined some of this stuff in various mechanisms, like Reg was mentioning earlier, you'll see that many of those pipelines intentionally avoid, like, Iran. If you get a map, even though Iran would be the straight route out from the Caspian Sea. But see, since like Pakistan is in formation with SAM, and some of these other little republics, you know, from the former Soviet Union, you see how the CIA and the ISI, which is the intelligence agency out of Pakistan, are all being players in training these various, Frankenstein monsters to play out their particular role for Sam's overall goal and outrage.
And lastly, just back to the health. And thank you very much for that, Reg. The health. Well, they got a strange way of helping. Kicking in people's doors, imposing curfews, setting up checkpoints in other people's countries. And then Abu Ghraib, where they rape prisoners and force them into humiliating business, and then take pictures of all of this. This is not a healthy nation, my brothers and sisters. I want you to know, as bad as you may think your situation is, it gets sicker. Given all of this, what do you really expect? How is head fixing of these dimensions, the stuff we just heard, maybe a little bit more of, how is it that somebody could actually say this on the air? And the answer is, they're not being challenged in a systematic and mass way. There is no revolutionary party. Without a party, these people could be run out of Dodge on a rail very easily if we are properly organized.
Next, Aaron Brown on the CNN show asked Senator Edwin Bayh about the probability of the credibility of an election in Iraq. So let's see what Senator Bayh has to say next about this. Check this out.
The Secretary General today said he had some doubts about the possibility of being able to pull off a credible election by January. I think the word here is credible. I think obviously if we want, we can pull off an election, but you got a chunk of the country in the Sunni triangle. It's hard to imagine how you do that. There are questions about whether the Sadr part of the Shia movement gets to play in the political process. Do you really believe we can pull off a credible election by January?
Credible.
I don't think it's a panacea, Aaron, and I don't think it will be a perfect election, certainly by our definition, but the question is whether some legitimacy, some democracy is better than none. I think if we just keep postponing it, then we give the radicals every incentive to keep disrupting the process. So, you know, it's not a perfect situation, but it's the best that we can do. I think we're facing a difficult situation, as you mentioned at the top, and we're going to have to take this a step at a time. It is very slow going, and I think the intelligence report that you mentioned that has recently come to the public's attention is the end of our illusions.
Don't buy what he's saying, because he's spreading more illusions at the same time, and they knew just what was going on. What you see in part is a collaboration of a bourgeois politician who's a Democrat with a bourgeois corporate media anchor, and they're talking all of this stuff about and they start from the platform that is already supposed to be accepted, that Sam is over there with the best of intentions, may make some mistakes, but Sam is there, you know. So once you start from that platform, of course the whole road is going to be warped that you are driving on, because it's a false road and platform that you began with. That's the role of the corporate media and how they play into giving legitimacy to a system and an empire that they are basically a component of. That's how they play into it. Now, all around the world, Sam, anytime if he finds one peasant that supposedly claims that he didn't get or she didn't get a chance to vote, Sam's all over there saying re-election, get him out. This is, you know, a dictatorship. Look at Venezuela. Mm-hmm. They were all up in there. Yet now here they're talking about how they may be able to have an election, but exclude the Sunni Triangle, which is basically a major region where they're getting whipped up. But still, that somehow is somewhat credible. I mean, only the most shameless types of forces could even try to come up with that type of stuff. But within the context of how the corporate media is set up, you know, and defined, they are, of course, are going to placate it. Now, of course, this is coming from a nation where the 2000 election was already a sham. 90,000 plus people were electronically Jim Crowed off the voting roll, the majority of them black, off of this make-believe felon scam where if you were a felon, you were supposed to not be able to vote in Florida. They used a software that any name that was similar to someone else's. So if your name was George R. Smith and you were from Florida and were 25 years old and had no felons, but someone named George C. Smith from Texas, who was 65 and had three felons, well, that's close enough, and you couldn't vote. And in some cases, they used a time machine to go into the year 2007, saw that you committed a felon back up, you know, up in those times, and scrubbed you off. This, in a civilized world, this would discredit anything that comes out of the mouths of these hoodwinking politicians and corporate media pundits. But we're living in a very artificial and demonic type of time and setting within the U.S. empire. And this is how these two clowns could talk and back and forth to each other, having a cordial discussion, acting like they're both trying to come to some kind of solution to the problem, and not at any time blink an eye or go blind by the contradictions that they are spewing out.
So the word today is credibility. I guess it's not a 50 cents word, but it's a $1 million concept when you're trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. This idea, what is credible, is basically what they think they can sucker people into accepting. That is the actual definition of credibility in America. Because the truth of the matter is, less than 25% of the American people bother to vote. Sorry, is that credible? Now, they just stole the election in Florida. And here's something. I mean, I don't know how many of you may have seen Fahrenheit 9-1-1. But not one senator, when the black congressmen got together and wrote up a petition and said there should be an investigation as to why all these black voters were taken off of the roll. They needed one senator to sign it, and then they could go ahead. Not one senator, not one, including Al Gore, who lost the election, came forward and signed the petition so there could be an investigation as to why thousands of black voters were taken off of the rolls. George Bush won by 500 votes, y'all. Is that credible?
And as been said before, you know, I've mentioned that basically this was a decision by the Democratic Party that it was more important to maintain the false integrity of the system than to come to the defense of the black folks who were Jim Crowed off of the voting roll. Right then and there, that should, in anyone who has any form of reasoning, discredit any form of lesser of two evil concept. If you have a party that you're voting for that intentionally betrayed your vote, even though you were voting for them, because they're more interested in maintaining some kind of false illusion about
keep
the system
like
and letting their so-called, quote-unquote, opponent win, then that tells you or should tell you everything you need to know about the system at hand. All right. Now, next, one example of how Sam exposes himself is, and how it's in part trying to be covered up constantly, is the whole torture issue that went on with many of the inmates over in Iraq. Here on NPR's Talk of the Nation, General Horner describes, with once again rose-colored glasses, that what happened to those prisoners and what is happening to those prisoners is not really all so bad. Let's check out what this clown has to say. Check this out.
General Horner?
I think you miscast. Prisoners in Guantanamo are not covered by the Geneva Convention. They don't wear uniforms. They don't do the things that gets one's credit under the Geneva Convention. Nonetheless, the White House directed that they be treated humanely and to the extent possible compatible with the Geneva Convention. So that's kind of a red herring. There were abuses, but the abuses generally fall in two categories. One is criminal behavior. Then there's abuse. For example, at Guantanamo, a prisoner bit a guard and took a chunk out of his arm, and the guard hit the prisoner in the face, and the guard was punished under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. So that's a case of substantiated abuse where punishment was needed out. But to try and create this aura that there's this massive plot of people committing abuse because of guidance or pressures is just not right.
Okay, now, this is kind of incredible because now he's whining about Guantanamo, and he's trying to pretend that the empire and its administrators, you know, Boy George and them, who passed all of these laws and these soundbite sayings that, you know, someone is not a prisoner of war, you know, they're an illegal combatant. And they did all of this to skirt around applying or having applied the Geneva Convention to them. This was so that they could brutalize them and set up these secret torture squads. Now, this should come as no surprise. Look, the School of the Americas and the 200-plus other School of the Americas-type institutions that exist in America are designed to, amongst other things, teach their various South American future dictators like Noriega, Hugo Banzer, Suarez, et cetera, to torture and beat down the population. Sam is Dr. Frankenstein, creating Frankenstein monsters to unleash upon the masses. These guys in Guantanamo, these little soldiers, they're just little Igors. They're not really Frankenstein monsters, per se, because they don't really have no long-term future. But they're just little obedient Igors that are carrying out the deeds and pulling the switches, the electrocute you, and all of this type of stuff. But Sam has been neck-deep in this type of stuff. He violated over 5,000 South Asians and other people, Mid-Eastern people, and rounded them all up. Didn't charge him with any laws. In some of the cases, like Muhammad Butt, ends up having broken ribs, broken bones in other parts of his body. They say he died of a heart attack. Now, what does this all sound like? This sounds like this good old home, old-fashioned treatment of black folks in America. You know, where you have all of these prison beatings and torture, you know,
daily.
Like at the Chicago police station when Burge was putting electrodes to people's genitals and ears and frying them up and all of this type of stuff because they were suspects and all of this type of thing. And while this was all created off the mantra of having a war, the Empire's favorite word, in this case, a war on crime, a war on drugs, a war on guns, et cetera, et cetera. In this case, the newly Negrofied Arabs of the world are the victims of this through the whole war on terrorism mantra. It's the empire applying the same type of destabilizing, demoralizing, and death-thrusting effects on the world population. Look, these fools, as I said many times before, once the empire conquered the Indians on this in this country, it did not stop its westward expansion. It's continued its manifest destiny westward expansion, and it's turning the whole world, or attempting to turn the whole world, into a giant Indian reservation. And all you have to do is look all across the world, and you'll see the same trail of blood, trail of tears, all over the planet, from Nicaragua to Cambodia to Vietnam to Angola to Iraq. That's Sam's lifeblood, death and destruction. Now next, here to kind of undermine some of this nonsense that this general was yapping about, here's Seymour Hersh. He's the author of a new book called Chain of Command. And he describes how this secret organ, quote-unquote, began using torture and how it emanated. So let's see what Seymour Hersh has to say. Now, Seymour Hersh is the same person who actually broke the May Lai story back during Vietnam. He's broken many stories exposing Sam's fangs. Check it out.
It's when you're dealing with secret units as a journalist, it's so complicated. I know the unit existed. I know there was a presidential finding for it. I've talked to those very senior people in the Congress who authorized such things. And, of course, the secrecy is so overwhelming. When you have a unit like this, it's called a special access program. So this unit began to fray in terms of what it was doing. It began to get more violent towards the prisoners, particularly as the insurgency continued. It was broad. There was an intellectual underpinning, and let me tell you what it was. It is a fact that you, by humility, one way to break an Arab, a sophisticated Arab, is a sexual humiliation. In the Arab world, the idea of being photographed, a male being photographed in the nude, obviously for a female too, it's the ultimate form of degradation, and also the notion that you would photograph him simulating homosexual acts, as the photographs we've seen in Abu Ghraib, and the notion that a woman would be there with the thumbs up or thumb down, an American woman would be there observing this and making fun of it. And the idea was, and I was told this in the beginning, you use this selectively for people you want to recruit. And let me explain that. We had no intelligence about the insurgency in Iraq. We had arrested, by this time, by the fall of 2003, when this program began, September, when Abu Ghraib, the abuses began, there were maybe, I think, as many as certainly more than 10, 15, 20,000 Iraqis had been arrested, many of them in routine sweeps of traffic blocks. And the goal was to take young men, put them in a position where they were sexually humiliated, take photographs of them, and then you would have potential blackmail material. And then you could perhaps tell these young men, go home to your community, join the insurgency, and start telling us what's going on. The idea was to recruit people. And of course, whatever the intent was in September, it quickly transmogrified into something that we now know, the horrible abuses. And what's interesting is, let me just say this, in October of 2003, the CIA, which has been not adverse to very rough interrogations, the CIA officials in the prison were so appalled by what they were seeing, they withdrew their people from the prison. And this I know from not one, not two, three or four people in the agency. They actually told their people to get out of there because all hell was going to break loose.
Now, you know when the CIA is getting out of Dodge, these fools, these dogs are just going buck wild. Now, part of this has to do with Sam. When things don't go well for the Empire and it's trying to spread the illusion amongst this gumpified masses and head coffins keep rolling back, it becomes more and more vicious in its attempts to subjugate the Indians on the reservation. So this is in part what happened. But this gets into another aspect. You know, this whole special access program and all of that type of stuff, this has a theme within the Empire and within this administration. You remember, it wasn't too long ago, before the war started, that Rumsfeld set up the Office of Special Plans. This was this whole configuration where it was supposed to be getting this top-notch intelligence. Entities were all outlining that there was no weapons of mass destruction over there, that Saddam had no connection to the 9-1-1 hits, that Saddam was not trying to buy uranium from Niger, so on and so forth. So, of course, Rumsfeld puts together this little secret psyops clique to come up with this whole thing. And, of course, similar to this other program, it just ran amok and just start making up stuff. Just like this little special ops, this, you know, got more and more vicious and so on and so forth. In part, it's designed to do this, to do whatever it takes, in a sense. And meanwhile, the little minions at top have a form of plausible deniability. Now, the other aspect that you were talking about, and the reason why I say this in part, is because when you set up little things to, quote-unquote, break air of men, that means that you do have some intelligence coming in about the culture and the psyche and stuff like that and what it takes to kind of dehumanize them. And once again, this has its roots in American soil. You have at the Guantanamo, Virginia base, this is basically this like FBI intelligence lab. If one reads Eyes of My Soul, this is a black former FBI agent. He talks about how at the Guantanamo, Virginia lab, they basically have a psyops lab that is designed for the analysis of the black population in America and what techniques to do to throw black people off politically and so on and so forth. So, like, say you got some little roided out punk cop like Justin Velopi sticking some plunger or some obscene object like the American flag up Abner Louima's rectum. Remember when that happened, you know, in the police bathroom? And then he breaks out some of Abner's teeth and so on and so forth. Now, this is so Abu Ghraib-like and obscene that, of course, large numbers of people are going to, you know, be in an uproar and be ready to, you know, to chop some heads. But what the Guantanamo and all of them has set up is this psychops procedures of how to fake out the population. And what some of these mandates say is that, look, immediately have the raggedy mayors and governors denounce it and come out and say that they're going to put a commission together. So you destabilize the mobilizing instincts of the black population that has a history of mobilizing independently and not having faith in the institutions when they see things this obscene. Then you put various people that are somewhat well-known in the community to be, quote-unquote, in part of it, so they can be in part spokesmen. And then you just have it mired down because you put other coons in there, you know, Shelby Steele, Stanley Crouch, you know, and they tap dance and say, well, you know, all cops ain't bad, you know, and all of that type of stuff. And then the next thing you know, there's some other issue like the Rampart Division where they're rounding up and, you know, persecuting and destroying 100 other plus lives of innocent black people. So black people's attention is off of, you know, the Abu Ghraib Abner Louima thing, and then it's on Rampart. Then they do something, you know, so then black people's attention's on Rampart, and then the next thing you know, you turn around and you hear gunshots around the corner, and you go running over there, and you see Louima laying down dead. And you go, Louima, what happened? You know, and his last breath is that four psychotic cops shot at him 41 times and hit him 19. Then you're upset about that, and you try to set something up, and then they got their whole program working, and then you hear screams from Texas, and you run down to Texas, and you see 10% of the black population getting carted off to prison in Texas. They're all supposed to be drug dealers, kingpins, including 80-year-old black men and women, drug dealers and stuff. So now you're in an uproar about that, and then they got the Guantanamo Bay thing going on, and then you hear gunshots and screams in Oakland. You go, what the hell's going on? And you run to Oakland, and then here you see the rioters, Buck riding Knight Rider style from the Klan. So they, as long as you get caught up in how they set up their games to intentionally disinform you and mislead you that they have institutions to basically help solve the problem, then you'll forever be going around in circles in the same way that if you are misled into believing that pulling the lever for a raggedy Democrat or Republican is going to help solve the problems that exist for us today.
Now, actually, there is a way to respond to multiple abuses against our community. But that brings me back to what I mentioned earlier. We have to start all over. Plow anew and build from the ground up a revolutionary organization with a leadership capable of chewing bubblegum and walking at the same time.
And make many of those cops and other people who are involved in those types of procedures a head coffin candidate. Yeah. Now next, Hearst describes how the pitcher, in a sense, said a million words that Sam has had a hard time getting beyond. This is on the Terry Gross show where, you know, Seymour Hersh was being interviewed by the, she's kind of a liberal talk show host. Check this out.
Well, common sense would tell you in retrospect that you have photographs. Look, what made the story of Abu Ghraib a story? I could have written 500,000 words about it, and so could other reporters. What made it were the photographs. Once you saw those photographs, and once you know those photographs were in circulation, one of the problems they had in the investigation, they discovered that all of the military policemen and many of the people who were serving in the military units and on detail at Abu Ghraib, not only military police, but the military intelligence officers and regular army soldiers. You know how kids are today, CD-ROM, they copy music all the time. Well, they copied all these photographs in the CDs, and they were all over the place. And one of the first goals in the early days of the investigation was to go around and collect these CDs from the various soldiers. Soldiers who had nothing to do with it had these photographs. The photographs were lethal, just lethal. And, you know, and Rumsfeld saw him, certainly was briefed on him. I can't say that he actually saw him until later. The chief of staff or the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Myers, said he was aware of it. You know, I think Rumsfeld testified there were many thousands of court-martials every year in the military. Somehow this case, as the Pentagon has acknowledged, somehow within 2 days of learning about what happened in Abu Ghraib, Rumsfeld tells the president about it. This is according to the Pentagon's own chronology in early January. Clearly, they knew there was something special about this. And so the obvious question is, why not make it public yourself and take the beating, make it something you put out? Because if you have the other guys you know, you're going to have military court-martials. You can't stop that. And these photographs are going to get into lawyers' hands, are going to get into the press. But they didn't choose. They chose not to do so. And you have to only wonder, are they that obtuse? My speculation, if it means anything, is they were protecting the secret operation as much as anything else do.
You also said that there was a policy of no resignations, that Vice President Cheney phoned Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld with the message, no resignations. How did you find out about that, and how do you interpret it?
What happened was, after the Abu Ghraib stories broke, largely because of a lot of the stuff I wrote in the New Yorker in May, the vice president did call Rumsfeld and said, no resignations, we're going to tough it out, hang tough, everybody stay together. I can tell you that's very pro forma for these guys. The idea is, in this White House, you hang tough, you give up nothing. That's standard. It's everything is political. I think the point of the call, as I wrote in the book, was nothing more than he was saying, this is a political problem now, we have to deal with it politically, sensitively, and no squeamishness. And I can tell you, I learned about it from one of the highest ranking defense officials that we have in our government. And that's as much as I can say, because I look clearly, Terry, in the last 3 years, I've been doing a lot of stories that are very critical.
Right.
And clearly there's an alternative. People are talking to me on the inside. You know, I wouldn't say they're a funnel. I don't want to diminish what I'm doing. I don't want to pat myself on the back too much either, because clearly people on the inside have been talking to me, because there is an alternative history of this war that they want out.
Okay, once again, this helps expose how vicious and ruthless the empire is, and how in no way it is in any way for the stands as an entity for the interests of the masses of the people in this country or throughout the world. First of all, it's clear that part of the reason why they pay special notice to it is because of this special situation. The Rodney King tapes. In other words, a picture does say 1,000 words, and there's certain things that they have a much harder time to get around and try to explain away. So when you see these various pictures, many of which have not even been released, some showing kids being raped, some showing women being raped, they have a much harder time hiding their bestiality. What is also interesting is how Hirsch mentioned that Cheney phoned Rumsfeld that there was to be no resignation, that they were going to tough it out, which basically gives you an indication that, therefore, expansion, barbarity, and torture without any hesitation, and they are willing to do this and not punish people because this is part of their program. In other words, if they already are calling before any investigation is done and says, look, Rumsfeld, no resignations by anyone, that basically says that anything you guys have done, we're going to back you, because after all, you're fighting the good fight, and that's what it's all about for those rulers. If you fight the good fight on their side, you can engage in any level of barbarity, any form of depleted uranium genocide, as long as you're on their side. There is no bounds. So this gives an indication, once again, of not only the barbarity of the state, but the barbarity of the role of the corporate media. Because you didn't see any of these corporate media minions challenging these guys about these memos and stuff. It all comes out in Hirsch's books about, you know, how this thing happened. But meanwhile, all of these minions on these corporate shows like Fox and all of that, they're all arguing and hollering over themselves about some junk concerning the issues. You got Rush Limbaugh saying that, you know, basically how those people were treated is how you were treated at a frat party if you're initiated into, you know, one of those little fraternities and all of that type of stuff. Meanwhile, in typical classical fashion, it seeps out the memory hole of many of the people within this society who want to maintain their mythological good guy view of America. In the same way that you hardly, if it's not brought up, like on slavery vote, you don't even really hear people bringing up things like, that have happened relatively recent about issues that were of enormous magnitude on the American landscape as far as geopolitical politics inside its borders, like the Central Park jogging case. Here you had a case where laws were changed. The age limit was lowered because five teenagers were accused of brutally raping and beating a white female jogger in Central Park in New York. They were thrown in prison for years. Their lives destroyed. And then all of a sudden, Reyes, this guy comes out and is exposed as being the only one who brutalized the jogger. He was the only one who raped her. He was the lone culprit in all of this. And that the police coerced and brutalized these teenagers into confessions by various means, Abu Ghraib style. You know, in other words, they basically said at the end of the day, after being under the boot of the Americanos police, that whatever you want me to say in the end, I'll say. So you have this tradition of this barbarity because we live in a society that basically says, any way you can subdue the Negroes on these shores, do it and go for it. And any way you can subdue the Indians on the global reservation in Iraq or anywhere else, go straight ahead.
Actually, though, it is proven that the Bush gang, the Bush Wolfowitz Cheney gang, note the word gang, very deliberate, conscious term. This gang is actually making it the situation more dangerous for the imperialists. For instance, generally speaking, if I'm a soldier, I'd like to know that if I'm caught, they ain't gonna break out with the saw and the head chopper, because we ain't doing that to them. We try to do them halfway, then they, you know, we gotta understand in here. There is no such understanding. And that's why you notice the head coffin business started booming after Abu Ghraib became common knowledge all over the world.
Well, often the U.S. empire basically makes it unsafe, not only just for itself and its particular interests, but most directly, often for the masses, especially if they're asleep. This has a tradition. When the U.S. Soldiers during the 1800s were running around chopping off the breast of Indian women, scooping them out, letting it dry out, using it as tobacco patches, cutting out their private parts, putting it over saddles, it didn't go over too well with Crazy Horse. So guess what? The Indians got serious about killing them up some custards. I mean, you know, so the fact that Sam's little G.I. Joes get more and more barbaric, of course, makes it a little bit more unstable in some kind of traditional warfare. If you got G.I. Joes in Vietnam getting little Vietnamese babies and throwing them up in the air and then doing target practice, and you're a North Vietnamese cat and you're watching them shooting your babies, guess what? You're going to tell some friends if you survive, and you're going to join in the head coffin business.
That's right.
I mean, so Sam has had a historical place and role in doing this type of barbarity and creating an atmosphere, a global atmosphere, that makes it not only more dangerous for his overall interests, but often for its little frontline shock troop soldiers. Right now, there's an article that was out in the paper the other day where they bought these soldiers. These guys were all about to finish their term of duty. They're all about to go out. And they got them and said, look, you guys, you got to sign up for 3 more years. If you don't sign up for 3 more years, we're going to ship you right now to a platoon that's going to Iraq. And if your term happens to come up there, but you're still on active duty, well, just keep shooting, because we ain't sending you no ship to come back home. Now, of course, many of these soldiers were infuriated, and for many of them, it confirmed that, hey, they are just being used as stooges. But the reality is unless you take it a next step and to organize in a form of resistance in blocks amongst fellow like-minded people, and then broaden that out into a larger scale to combat a common enemy and realize that this is an enemy, you'll just be isolated and upset, and then basically like a drone, sign the paper and go get your head chopped off somewhere.
Well, so you do want to check out this film that's going around calling Iran Uncovered. It's actually a film about CIA agents who are denouncing Bush for this very reason.
Because, you mean Iraq Uncovered.
Excuse me. Iraq Uncovered. Also, just another very quick point on that. They got a situation going on where Bush and his crew, because they didn't like something that another bourgeois element said, outed his wife. She was functioning as a CIA agent. And the president's people outed.
You're talking about Valerie Plame. That was over. You're talking about the whole Niger's thing.
That's correct.
That's basically the way Sam works, as we were saying before. You pledge your allegiance or pay the price. Sign that you're going to sign up for 3 more years or pay the price. And we're going to ship your ass right off to Iraq right now. We want your complete obedience. Just a ruthless game.
Yeah, I think that a number of soldiers, I might go as far as argue that, part of the reason they get mollywopped in Iraq is, morale. Of course, the morale of the Iraqi, righteous Iraqi people is extremely high. It should be, but the morale of the soldier, U.S. Forrest Gump type soldier, is not where it needs to be either.
Okay, part of that reason to go on from that is that look, when you go into a situation where if you are silly enough to believe in some of these myths that Boy George was saying, and then you go and say the major war is over and all of that, and you believe all that propaganda, and then you think that they're going to be throwing out roses to you and all of that type of stuff. But in the meantime, you have generals who are saying, look, we need 200,000 at least more troops to really do the job. And then you start to see that come true, and then you don't see the 200,000 more troops to come do the job. You know, whether you're a pro-imperialist G.I. Joe drone or not, you could start to become demoralized, which is the case. Then you start seeing that, wait a minute, I got to pay if I want more than 2 bottles of water a day in this 110-degree heat, and I have to pay for a Kevlar vest just to protect me. I gotta pay if I'm in the so-called green zone to go see a movie. You know, I mean, this is some sick stuff, but it's basically showing the contempt that Sam has. And also, when you're starting to see people drop, not from bullets, just from sicknesses, and you know that it has the effects of this depleted uranium and other toxic soups that are going on, and then you see Boy George and them make up this new term, dry pneumonia. You know, this making up, you know, this artificial science. Then that also has a demoralizing effect, especially amongst those people who believe in the myth. If you're some of the cats who come down there and, you know, say there was a draft and there was a healthy agitation going on amongst the masses, and you happen to get drafted, and you don't have Boy George's connections, and you know, and you just can't get out of Dodge or whatever, and you decide you're just going to go because you got drafted, but you're coming there with a healthy mindset, your outlook may draw you to the conclusion that if someone tells you to go and blow up some Iraqi girl who's just sitting over there by the fence, you may just shoot the captain, which is what happened oftentimes in Vietnam, you know. So you ain't demoralized. You just penalizing some fool and have an understanding about the situation that you're in.
Well, none of these, from my understanding, nobody with, you know, the rank low, higher than lieutenant is going into these areas, you know, where they get mollywopped, you know what I'm saying?
Well, why would they? All right, the last thing we got time for is Terry Gross asked Hearst how he came to publish this story before CBS's 60 Minutes. So let's see what they have to say about that. We'll take it from there. Check this out.
Now, the producers at 60 Minutes had obtained some of the photos of the torture at Abu Ghraib prison, though they didn't have the report by General Taguba, which you did have. 60 Minutes held off broadcasting those photos and the story at the request of the Pentagon. They eventually played it, but initially they held off at the Pentagon's request. Did the Pentagon know that you were going to publish the Abu Ghraib photos in the New Yorker and go with the story? And if so, what was their response? Did anyone from the Pentagon try to stop you from publishing?
Well, no. Without being overly self-service, you know, I want to pat myself on the back, but there would be no reason anybody in the Pentagon would think I would not publish. And in fact, it's because CBS did not publish that I got into the story.
What was the connection?
Well, somebody, there was a lot of unhappiness among certain people in the military and others who had presumably had helped CBS that they weren't publishing the story. I think they held it a few weeks, and somebody eventually came to me, and that's how I learned about it. And then I was, you know, I was able to not only obtain the photographs, but also obtain the report. And you know, CBS, when they did publish, by the way, did a first-rate job. But you know, one has to. In retrospect, I wish I could say I thought CBS was the only network that wouldn't publish like that. You know, would have been held off. But, you know, this is a very tough time for major networks with a very tough government. It was an election year coming. It's a little stunning that a story that's been widely described as the most significant, of Army malfeasance, certainly, perhaps since My Lai. Took so long. A network took so long to get the pictures on air.
In your mind, what was the argument for going with the story, and what would have been the argument for sitting on it or not going with it at all?
The argument would be for going.
And I'm not asking you to talk on behalf of CBS, but just as yourself as a reporter, knowing the huge implications that publishing this would have.
Oh my God! It's not even an argument. Our job is to report what's there. The idea that Arabs who were not found guilty of anything, whose legal status had not been adjudicated, one of the problems we have since the beginning of the war has been a complete inability to differentiate between bad guy and good guy. And one of the things that was so overwhelming and depressing in the early days about Guantanamo. There was no system for differentiation in violation of the Geneva Convention, et cetera, and also common sense and human dignity. Terry, it's a question that I don't even understand how, at least from my point of view. I mean, like, duh.
Well, that's because Terry's not coming from a truly humanitarian point of view. But this also gives some indication. While 60 Minutes is going back and forth over some little documents concerning the authenticity of Boy George's role in as a National Guardsman or not, when they had the actual documents and photos showing and exposing the barbarity of the state, as Seymour Hearst says, they held on to it and didn't release it at the request of the Pentagon. So the people who released it to CBS's 60 Minutes turned to him. So don't get caught up in the illusion that they're trying to play about oppositional forces in 60 Minutes or any other corporate media segment. They're all on the same side. Hold on a sec. That's just going to about wrap it up for Slave tonight. It's clear that the only way forward in this madness that we find ourselves in this capitalist hell on earth, is going through the dragon, not around it. And you know we can. I know I can. And when we all get it together, we will, in the end, win. Until the next time, Slave Revolt. Out.
In the world, and God we trust, an architect, doctor, maybe an actress, but nothing comes easy, it takes much practice. Like, I met a woman who's becoming a star, she was very beautiful, leaving people in awe, singing songs, Lena Horne, but the younger version, hung with the wrong person, got a strong one at her when cocaine, sniffing up drugs, all in the nose, could have died so young, now looks ugly and old, no fun, cause now when she reaches for hugs, people hold their breath, cause she smells of corrosion and death. Watch the company you keep, and the crowd you bring, cause they came to do drugs and you came to sing. So if you're gonna be the best, I'ma tell you how. Put your hand in the air and take the vow. I know I can.
I know I can.
Be what I wanna be.
Be what I wanna be.
If I work hard at it.
If I work hard at it.
I'll be where I wanna be.
I'll be